My guest at this time is Dr. Gary Wolfram. He is the William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy at Hillsdale College. He recently wrote an opinion column in The Hill imploring Congress to get serious about spending and pointing out that Washington must deal with the elephant in the room, which is entitlement or mandatory spending. He calls the deficit, or at least the title of the column does, a ticking time bomb. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a Hillsdale graduate, and Dr. Wolfram was one of my professors quite a few years ago. And so, Dr. Wolfram, good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It doesn't seem that long ago.
It doesn't some days. You start the piece by noting that the Senate Budget Committee Chairman Mike Enzi is wondering if there is even a point to the Budget Committee anymore, since Congress always seems to end up passing giant omnibus bills that jack up spending and no one ever has time to read. So if we can't even get the process right, how do we ever get politicians to make the tough choices on reining in spending?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, how it's supposed to work is that there's 12 appropriations bills that are all supposed to be passed by October 1st, which is the beginning of the fiscal year. And they are spending that is not already fixed through other legislation like the Social Security Act or Medicare Act. The last time they passed all 12 bills on time was 1994. So it's been a while. As I noted in the piece, that the current budget ran 2,232 pages. It was voted on by the House 17 hours after it was released, and the Senate voted the next day. So that tells me that I don't think any of the senators or any of the congressmen actually read all 2,232 pages and worked their way through and said, oh, you know, this butterfly museum that's been appropriated for Hillsdale is just too much. So I think, not that we really have a butterfly museum, but the only way to deal with this, though, is to deal with the underlying causes of the driving the expenditures. And those are those acts that the money gets spent no matter what Congress does because it's set in statute. Wow. For example, what's called mandatory spending. If you look at mandatory spending plus interest on the debt, in 2019 is going to be 70% of the budget outlays and 89% of the revenue. So if Congress didn't enact anything, 89% of the revenue is going out the door already with mandatory spending. If you get to 2028, according to the Congressional Budget Office, 98.5% of all the revenue that comes into the federal government is going to be spent already, either through Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and some other items that are already mandated, plus net interest. So if you do not do something about Social Security and Medicare, which between them are almost $2 trillion in 2019 and are going to be $3.3 trillion in 2028, you're not going to do anything while in the deficit.
Not only is the Hillsdale Butterfly Museum not real, there's nothing for Hillsdale College in the federal budget, so you're not adding a thing, which is blissfully wonderful for the college. But
that is true.
But you point out that in the last 50 years, we've only seen five budgets with a surplus, and four of them came in a row from 1998 to 2001. And you were working on Capitol Hill for a while, I remember, during the 90s. So what lessons from that time could we apply to today? Obviously, the debt is much, much bigger than it was then. But what principles might still work here?
Well, I think one of the principles was let's try to set a budget on an annual basis where the revenues are equal to the outlays, or at least close. And in particular, you could have, let's say, an emergency where World War II shows up. But the idea was to say, okay, we should be balancing the budget. And that was conveyed, that message was conveyed quite clearly. President Clinton, what's interesting, President, is that he really didn't have any philosophical position. He just wanted to get reelected. And so if he had to pass a budget or pass legislation that reduced in a balanced budget, it didn't bother him. And then what happened was we got 9/11, and then this whole idea of balancing the budget just went right out the window because we're going to fight a war in Iraq and all sorts of other things happen. I think what we need to do is to say, okay, how can we deal with this? And the way we deal with it, I think, is the way the state of Michigan does. In the state of Michigan, you cannot spend any money that is not appropriated annually. So if we used to have a revenue sharing act, or we still do have a revenue sharing act, that there were years when, even though the statute said this is how much money is supposed to go out, the legislature didn't appropriate the money or didn't appropriate enough money to make it happen. So everybody got a reduced share of it. So, for example, if you said, let's make it so that, you know, Social Security is supposed to spend $1.043 trillion in 2019. If the Congress, if this were the way the Constitution worked in the federal government, Congress appropriates $1 trillion, everybody gets their proportionate share of the $1 trillion. I think that's the type of thing that we got to be looking at, that we need to have something, because it's, you know, the major drivers of this spending are the third rail of politics. How do you deal with Social Security and Medicare?
Yeah, exactly right. That derailed. I remember George W. Bush briefly tried to deal with Social Security, and even most of his own party wanted nothing to do with it, which possibly leads to another question about how serious you think the lawmakers understand that this is right now, and whether they're willing to make the tough decisions before this thing engulfs us in a decade, as you pointed out, given the fact that we have people in a tizzy here in Washington about reductions in increases in spending compared to previous years.
Sure. I believe at some point things are going to get bad enough that they're going to have to deal with it. And at that point, then we will basically, we've got a division. We'll have a division between those folks that are getting Medicare and Social Security and those folks like you that are paying for Medicare and Social Security. And when we have to start raising your tax rates to, well, now you're paying 15% or 20% more in Social Security taxes than you are now, then there's going to be some pushback from the other side. So I think that is there. But in some ways, when I was Nick Smith's chief of staff in 1995, we proposed a Social Security proposal where you could take a certain percentage of your 12.4% that goes off to the federal government and put it into a private account in return for reducing your claim on Social Security taxes, or excuse me, Social Security benefits when you retired. And we could only get one person to show up when we have the press conference to announce the bill out there. It's always tough. Even Ronald Reagan had trouble. He was able to raise the retirement age. That is one way to really go about it as well in Social Security, raising the retirement age. If you could at least get that going, that works a good deal in Social Security. Medicare, you got to change the way the system works. Medicare, you got to make it like health savings accounts are in the private sector, where it's a high deductible policy and you get so much, and then you ask the question, how much does that cost when you go to get your blood test?
And Medicaid?
Same with Medicaid. I mean, when I tell my students, I ask them, gee, when you take somebody out to dinner, when do you tell them you're picking up the tab? And the answer is after they've ordered. The way Social Security and Medicaid work, they not only tell you they're picking up the tab, they tell the waiter you're picking up the tab. So the waiter comes out with the $500 bottle of wine, right? Think of what the incentives are in Medicare and Medicaid. It's to produce something that the government will pay for, even if it's inordinately expensive, because the person buying it is not the person that is receiving it. So actually, John Goodman has been very good on this. He's got a book called Priceless that's quite good. And he's been arguing for decades about health savings accounts. And I think if you apply that to Medicare and Medicaid, it'll change the whole incentives of the system. I'll be Walmart or Walgreens or whatever, and I'll have a nurse practitioner there, charge you $10 to tell you your kid's got pink eye, and then provide you with a prescription.
You mentioned we basically got a decade, probably less than that, to get serious about this. So how do you expect this to start, and when will we know if Congress is actually serious about this?
Well, that's a very good question. As soon as Congress starts to say, we're going to have to raise the Social Security tax in order to fund this thing, we're going to have to raise your tax on Medicare, which already happened under the Obama administration. You now pay 3.8% of the on your investment earnings if you're above a certain income level that you didn't used to have to do. So I think at the point where it really becomes clear that the only way to deal with this is to raise your Social Security and Medicare taxes, then there'll be an interest in, okay, how can we arrange this system so that it works? And I think what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to say, okay, if you're 55 and over, you know, you planned the, you know, for this thing to be there, it's, you know, we will provide that for you. But if you're younger than that, hey, you better start thinking about saving more, and you better start thinking about maybe you're going to work till you're 70 or work till you're 75.
Sounds like you think we don't have enough money for Bernie Sanders. Everyone gets a job, everyone gets health care, and nobody pays for college plan.
I would say yes. Bernie's going to be a little short on that one.
Dr. Wolfram, always good to have you with us. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Gary Wolfram is the William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy at Hillsdale College. His column in The Hill refers to the growing deficit as a ticking time bomb. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.